wrapping the kids out of their coats, the way the babies haven't been born. Unpacking the bags and sitting up and planning.
Welcome to Teacher Besties, a podcast for teachers. I'm Jamie.
And I'm Kelly. On this week's agenda, we will talk about a New Yorker article about a new school called Alt School, started by a tech company, former tech company guy. And we will also talk about a story that broke about a teacher who was fired after a student sent pictures from her phone that were nude, I believe.
Yeah.
And we'll also talk about our weeks.
Awesome. So why don't you start? What did you do this week?
Well, this week it was diversity week at my school. And you know that diversity is my jam. So I was really, really into it. I tried to be kind of on the committee for it. And I went to a few meetings and like helped out, but since it was my first year at this school, I sort of didn't feel comfortable being a leader. I wanted to kind of like feel out how it went and just kind of see what the process was. And so what happens is like basically the middle school level started this a few years ago and then they expanded it to both like the high school and some of the elementary schools. And they do like a whole week that's themed around, celebrating like various elements of diversity, like gender diversity, racial diversity, like everything under the sun. And then we do like one day that's like a rally where different groups, mostly clubs and stuff, will perform things that represents their culture. And, like the GSA did like a very informative, like thing about, gender being on a spectrum, which was pretty cool.
Oh, that's very advanced.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, they were really smart about it. Like they did like a 4-minute presentation where they like explained it as part of the rally.
Wow.
Yeah. And then it was like, you know, the Black Student Union danced, like they sang a song from Selma. They did like a whole bunch of cool things. And then with your fourth period, you get, like a 50-minute lesson where you, like the lesson that they designed for us was called Windows and Mirrors, and they show you different examples of things that you might see that with your own identity reflected in, which is the mirror. And then, other examples of things that like you see around you, but that you don't personally identify with is like the window. And,
that's neat.
Of course, added another 90-minute lesson on top of it and taught it to all my classes.
Good for you.
So I did it like Thursday and Friday. I did like kind of an extended lesson, mostly because even though I think the middle school teachers are really well-meaning, I think that they sometimes don't always know how to like up the rigor or up the level of thinking. So like talking about diversity with middle schoolers is very different than when you talk to seniors about it.
Oh, absolutely.
So I did a whole lesson where, we watched a clip from Aziz Ansari's Masters of None.
Oh, which clip?
The Indians on TV, like the 7 minutes.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, so we like talked about how, like we started the conversation with like, you know, what are the problems with like, you know, boxing people into these stereotypes and, like, especially in the media, what's the problem with like depicting certain groups in like very limiting ways. And then I branched it out and we had discussions about like, particularly because we live in an area with like where the tech industry kind of dominates. And that's an industry that's definitely like struggled with like trying to diversify among ethnicities and gender. And so we read like some articles about that and I talked to them about like how one of the hiring practices at a lot of these companies is to ask the hiring committee whether or not the candidate fits in with the culture of the company. And we talked about like how there could be like, bias cooked into that question and like,
wow. You know,
Yeah, so we got, like, pretty deep into it. And
that was and just then, with seniors or all your classes?
No, I did it with my juniors and seniors. And we also talked about at the end, like, I did an optional thing where, like, if you felt comfortable and, like, really strongly about something, you could, like, commit to being an ally about something. And then they put these posters on the wall. So, you know, definitely not all of my students did this because I talked to them about how, like, you know, it has to be, like, a serious thing that you feel comfortable doing. And you have to be willing to, like, speak up for people that feel kind of, like, powerless in situations.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely, like, I don't know, probably 40 or 50 of my students out of, like, 150 did, like, a poster about being an ally. And they were, like, awesome, too. They weren't even just, like, the ones that would obviously come to mind. Like, some people were, like, writing about income inequality, and some people were, like, saying they were going to stand up for people with, like, various physical abilities. And
wow.
They were just, like, awesome.
Those
I was
students.
So impressed. Yeah.
So similarly this week, my school also had it was Health and Mindfulness Awareness Week, or
cool.
They had a cooler name for it that I am not able to think of right now, but basically
yeah.
Mental Health Awareness Week.
Yeah.
And so every day was a dress up day, which they do well. So cute fact, Wednesday was Be Who You Want to Be Day. And I had two students dress up like me, which was awesome.
So did they just wear, like, black pants, so, like, ankle-length pants and, like,
they wore colors that
top.
I would wear. So I told them I would twin with them. So, yeah, I wore black ankle pants and a maroon top.
Nice.
And that was fun. But in,
that's awesome because basically they're saying they want to be like you.
I know. I felt very honored.
That's cool.
Although one of my girlfriends was like, why do they want to dress up like you? That's not saying a lot about them. And I was like, ouch.
Ouch.
Like, I don't think I would have ever done that in high school, but I appreciated it now. Would you have dressed up like a teacher?
No, but that's because I wasn't as cool as I am now.
Oh, okay.
Or let me rephrase it. I was not, like, a great student like you are. I mean, I was, like, a good kid, but I didn't look at my student or my teachers as, like, like, I didn't have a teacher that I felt was, like, really inspiring in the way that, like, sometimes I have students that I get the feeling that they, like, realize that I'm trying to do things to inspire them or, you know, make them feel good about themselves. Like, I didn't necessarily have that teacher.
Yeah. I don't know if I had that teacher. I think I just would have been too afraid to dress up as a teacher. Like, I thought they maybe would have thought I was making fun of them. Anyway, but the week ended in a rally with – it was kind of – a little weird in that it was people talking about their emotions and seriousness and then also playing games at the same time.
Like the tone was a little bit like up and down.
Yeah. But people seemed to be into it and that was really great.
Cool.
I did not do anything in my classes specifically to incorporate the week.
Hmm.
But I still think that at least most of the upperclassmen that I talked to seemed really to appreciate it.
Yeah.
And anything to reduce stress and get students to be slightly more reflective is success in my book.
What are some of the things that they did at the rally?
A hokey one is they gave out stress balls.
Aww.
I think my principal may have gotten hit in the head with one of them.
That's not cool.
I'm going to assume it was an accident.
Yeah.
And they had both students and faculty volunteer to speak out. And so there were a lot of students talking about struggles they've overcome and a few staff members. I did not do that because I am
too
chicken.
That's really hard for you.
Yeah, I can talk to you about all of my struggles, which there are not that many, but I can talk to you about things, just not an entire audience of students who often mistake me for being a student.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. I think it's sometimes it's really important for students to realize, like, to see someone that they now see as, like, pretty confident. Like, most teachers have to be pretty confident in front of their students, and to see that as that person be somebody who, like, also struggled with, like, depression or anxiety or just self-doubt, that can be, like, I think pretty good for them all around.
Absolutely. That they're not the only ones struggling with an issue.
Thank you.
Well, I wanted to talk about this lady from South Carolina who got, well, it says she actually resigned, but the title of the article says she was fired after a student stole her phone and distributed nude photos of her.
I read this story in several sources, and everywhere it says that she resigned under pressure.
She left her phone on her desk when she went to go do hall duty, which I don't think is unreasonable at all. I often leave my phone on my desk.
Same.
Which apparently I will not be doing anymore. Not that I have nude photos on my phone. Moot point. Will not be leaving phone on desk. Anyway, So she came back in and a student said that she was going to get what was coming to her.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I didn't know that part.
She didn't know what happened. Then later, the student confessed to other students, and when the principal asked what he did, he confessed full on, and then the students corroborated the story and said, yes, he distributed these photos. So she says that, I mean, she doesn't have to justify why she had the photos on her phone. It's her private property. It wasn't from the school. She wasn't doing anything wrong. I think she was a victim.
Absolutely.
However, she should have had a password on her phone, but again, you can't go back and change things, and it's not her fault. I would like to think that you can be trusting, but apparently...
Well, let me rephrase it, because I know that you are not, like, victim blaming.
No, so, I'm not. I'm like, frustrated on her behalf.
Let me rephrase it. Warning to teachers, like, all the more reason to have a passcode on your phone. That being said, I can tell you right now that I feel a lot of sympathy or empathy for her, because I have left my phone on my desk before where I do have a passcode, but for whatever reason it wasn't locked. Like, maybe I had been checking it before I left the room. I had a hall monitor come in and watch my class for a minute while I went to the restroom.
Yeah.
And when I came back, the hall, like, I mean, I never noticed until I checked my phone, like, during the weekend. I looked at my pictures, and the hall monitor, like, totally in good spirits, didn't bother me at all. But, like, he had taken a selfie with my whole class on my phone. And it's, like, the thing he does when he sees teachers' phones unlocked.
Yeah.
And so there's an example right there. Like, my phone was left out. It was completely well-meaning. It normally is unlocked. It wasn't. I will also say that I do have a few nude pictures of my child when he's had a rash sent to me recently, which, like, after I read this story, totally freaked me out, because I was like, okay, like, there's nothing wrong with me having those. I had to send them to a doctor, but they are still saved in my cloud.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, just a lot of, like, really bad scenarios ran through my head when I read this story, where I feel like it just feels like this teacher and like that student was out to get the teacher, and like, I don't know, that seems like it was poorly handled.
Absolutely. Something I thought that was nice is that one of the articles I read, because I also read many, said that the parents of the student who started this completely backed the teacher and were very, very upset with their son. There was talk for a while about her, like, in some way being a co-collaborator for distribution of nude photos because she left her phone unlocked, but they're not, police are not pursuing that, which I thought was crazy. And it just, I think it's really sad that, I mean, I probably would have resigned too, because that's beyond awkward, but I think it's terribly sad.
Well, I mean,
I don't know. I just kind of feel like kids, like, why would a kid be so mean?
But then again, like, This also made me think about this new book that I really want to read, called American Girls.
Oh.
And it's kind of about, it's a new nonfiction book by this one woman who, I don't know, I think she writes for one of those, like, either the New Yorker or Slate or something like that. But she did research for years on last couple of years on, like, the American teen, mostly girls, and like how the sexualization of American teenagers has changed because of the smartphone and because teenage boys ask them to take nude photos of them. And they do, because they're impulsive and young and they don't think anything else and they trust the person on the other end. And then that photo gets all around. And it just made me think about, like, teenagers in general and how necessary it is for their parents to talk to them about these things. And that it's not like a laughing matter and that it's like a private thing just because you have the power to share this image with one click of a button on the internet does not mean you should. And that seems really obvious to us, but based on a lot of the things I've been hearing about it, just seems like this is an issue for a lot of teenagers.
Yeah.
So
on a lighter note, I just tried to look up that book to see who wrote it. And the only thing I'm finding are American Girl doll books.
I would go directly to Amazon because it just came out. But so I don't know. The situation sucks. It makes me kind of wonder also, anytime I hear about a teacher getting fired or asked to resign over something that seems like an easy way to get rid of them, I always wonder, like, if someone was out to get her anyway, you know? And I hate to be that cynical, but honestly, like, sometimes that can be the way that they fire somebody that they don't like.
Yeah, that, I don't think I want to talk about that. Should we move on and talk about this really interesting article?
Yeah.
Or I guess not even an article, but a concept for a school.
Well, I mean, it was a long form article in, I think, last week's New Yorker called Learn Different. And it was written by Rebecca Mead. It's about the Alt School. Were you familiar with that school before you read this?
Not at all.
Oh, okay. So I was familiar with it. I don't know why. I mean, probably because, like, since I was moving schools, I just looked at a lot of schools to apply to.
You applied there?
No. But just, like, when I was looking at schools, I was looking at schools, like, all throughout the Bay Area, and this, I think, came up on my radar then.
So explain what it is.
Okay. Alt School is a private school, and they have several locations in the Bay Area, Palo Alto, San Francisco. They have one location in Brooklyn Heights. It's a small private school started by a guy who is a former Google executive and also had his own startup, I think, at one point, which he then sold to Google. It's a very small private school. It costs about $30,000 to attend.
And there are about 35 kids in each school site.
In each school site. And what, there's like five or six school sites?
Yeah, there are five.
What is alt about it is that it is like, it's a combination of blended learning and also like this idea of personalized education where every kid is doing something that they want to focus on. So they get like goals for the day, they have questions for the day, and they use a combination of technology and, you know, just the fact that they are there's a very few number of students with a teacher that can help gear them into a direction. They kind of get to create their own curriculum.
Yeah. So it says that, and this is a quote from the article, Alt School's ethos is fundamentally opposed to the paradigm of standardization that has dominated public education in recent decades and reflects a growing shift in emphasis among theorists towards personalized learning. This approach acknowledges and adapts to differences among students, their abilities, their interests, and their cultural backgrounds.
Yeah, I mean, they get like a playlist of things that they're going to do every day. Like, it has sort of like startup company written all over it because the way they describe the classrooms is like very much like beanbag chairs and everybody has an iPod or an iPad that they're working on. And, you know, they used an example of one kid who was in Palo Alto who has like the top schools, you know, like some of the top schools in the country to begin with. But the parents pulled him out of his like third grade or something because he was interested in architecture. And all he was getting from his teachers in the public school was kind of the notion that that's cool. You can study architecture in college. And his parents kind of wanted him to be able to do things now. And they used the example that at Alt School, he like researched different forms of architecture and then like built models and like is designing things and some really cool things.
Yeah, absolutely. But
the other thing I would say about this is it just the first thing, even as I was reading this, the first thing I thought was that their goal is not to create these schools. Their goal is to create some sort of software that they're going to sell to public schools nationwide.
Absolutely. So what I thought about while reading it, which is along the same lines, is basically, so sadly, in real life, you don't always get to pick what you want to do in your job. Like, it's awesome when you can, but sometimes your job is just doing what someone else tells you. And sadly, but truly, a lot of the times in school, it's learning how to work within confines of a situation. So learning to do what someone tells you to do. So even though you may not necessarily need to know, I don't know, the capital of Latvia in 5 years, the fact is that, like, if someone tells you to do it in school or someone tells you to do it in your job, you have to be able to do that, not just because it interests you.
Yeah, I think that, if anything, the kids that are being educated at these schools, like, just aside from the fact that their parents can fork over 30 grand and get them into a school that is, like, so elite, I think it also is just a great example of people who work at these companies that are, you know, they value creativity and imagination and all of that great stuff.
Which is awesome.
Like, which is awesome, but they don't really reflect on that aspect. And it's also probably because they don't see their kids doing jobs that need that. You know, they sort of see their kids being pushed into, like, it's almost like they don't see, like, steps one and two before they get to be, like, the creative head of whatever they create, you know?
So, oh my God, there's something good we learn in teacher school that we can learn. We know how to scaffold activities for our students.
Yeah.
No, but I really do actually think it was a cool idea.
No, it's a cool idea, but I think the other thing that kind of hit a nerve with me, honestly, was when the writer was kind of just listing how, like, a lot of Silicon Valley's top tech guys have invested in education in various ways.
Yeah, that was surprising.
It didn't surprise me, but I knew a lot of those, many of them unsuccessful, most famously Mark Zuckerberg with the New Jersey school system.
Yeah, that I know all about.
Conversely, like, Bill Gates, very influential with the Bill Gates Foundation, a bunch of other things. But what struck a nerve with me was kind of that idea that, like, even though they were pretty successful in school, they felt like they could do it better. And it just made you feel like, well, okay, but none of these guys even have experience in education from the other side. And
so
they are,
I don't necessarily
serving.
Think that, like, you need to go to teacher school to be experienced in education, but at the same time, I don't think that you can just blindly go in and say, I was a student, I know how to do it.
I don't even think it has to do with teacher school. How about just, like, experience on the job? Like, nothing prepares you more for understanding the systems of a school than working in one, and all schools are pretty unique. Like, having worked in three different school systems at this point in my career, like, I can tell you they're all very different. They share some similarities, but a lot of it is, you know, logistical and administrative and things like that, you know?
Yeah.
And also, a lot of it is out of your control. A lot of it is your population. And they definitely didn't say anything about how they would focus on a struggling population.
No, not at all. I'd like to take a minute to talk about the teacher that they highlighted in here, who was a former Teach for America person.
Yeah.
Who said that she was frustrated basically because she was working in a low SES area in San Jose, and she didn't have data to help drive her teaching, which I'm going to be very critical for a minute. Like, very critical. I'm sorry. How did she not have data to drive her teaching? Like, why did she only need state data? Because that's a load of crap. You can collect data on your own to figure out how your students are doing, and depending upon how fast you grade it, you can use that to inform your instruction the next day.
Okay, you're right. And I think the reality of what she's saying is it's very difficult to collect data on 165 kids every day if that's what you do have, so you don't always do it. And when you have a couple of kids and a lot of technology around you, it becomes vastly, you know, easier, just like everything, right?
Let's also talk about the creep factor with this level of technology.
Oh, right. There's a camera in every room where they can just watch what you're doing.
And record, like, they're recording you at all times.
They're recording your class at all times. They're also emailing parents constantly, like, assignments, Billy did this, you know, almost to a level where I'm like, is that good for the kid? Like, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, when I think about my own child, I think, yes, I'd love to have all that stuff. But then I realize, like, sometimes we're our own enemies. Like, maybe sometimes it's a good thing that I don't know every single thing. Like, when I'm thinking about him getting older, you know, because they need to learn how to manage that stuff on their own eventually.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I guess the good thing about this school at the moment, it only goes to grade 8.
Yeah.
So eventually they'll have to manage themselves. But do you think that if they don't actually continue this program and they go to, quote, normal high school? I'm just curious how successful these students would be if they weren't in a normal room the whole time.
I don't even know about these students in particular, because many of these students, I mean, all of these students, for the most part, are pretty privileged, with the exception of maybe some of their scholarship kids. But I would say the larger question to me was the idea that, you know, they think they're going to be creating all these, because they have a lot of venture capitalist money. So if the overall idea is to develop software and technology that they're then going to sell to public schools, it just doesn't seem like they're problem solving it with a population that is really representative of some of the problem schools in the country, or schools that are going to struggle with it.
Absolutely. And so if one of the issues we currently have is getting enough of the regular technology into our rooms because of funding, even if they're developing all these really awesome things, which I admit some of the things are really cool. It would be neat to have individualized learning cards for differentiation for my students.
Totally.
But how are schools going to be able to afford this unless all these venture capitalists are going to evenly distribute that wealth to public education as a whole?
They're not. They want to make money.
I know.
Okay, wait. So here's the other thing, too, that I wanted to complain about a little bit was...
Wait,
they did...
before you complain, I was really nervous. I thought you were going to just love this article and be like, yeah, alt ed, we should do... At first, I was a little nervous. Okay. Just wanted to put that out there.
So another thing that this writer rightfully points out is that... like many of the things that are in their model, like including the homework that is always done on their iPad, can't be done if you don't have Wi-Fi at home.
Yes.
She pointed out, she also pointed out that even these kids that are used to this environment, like they were Googling images of an animal they were studying, and then some other things came up, like they Googled a seal, and Seal the Singer came up, and then something else came up that got them thinking or laughing about it, and then all of a sudden they were like totally off task. And I think she kind of, like, I don't know if she did this explicitly, but I definitely thought about the classroom that already has a hard time, like, you know, keeping on track, and then how difficult that would be.
Yeah.
And then they only go to eighth grade. So doing this with a high school class, I mean, how different would that be, right? Because all the, like, parental controls and things that would need to be on the internet.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I like to think about, and I think I've talked to you about it before on here, is, I mean, are we causing students to have excessive back problems by incorporating so much technology? Because at least for me, like... my room is not really ergonomic, and those poor kids use those computers every day, and I see so many of them hunched over, and I feel really bad.
I mean, I also sort of think sometimes, like, that, okay, on the positive, the people that are making this school, they're genuinely trying to say, like, a third grader in 2016 is not a third grader 40 years ago, so why are we educating them the exact same way? Valid point.
Very valid.
However... sometimes I think the practicality of education in terms of, like, you know, this is what they're going to do every day when they're on the job, if they work for these companies, is a little bit like, well, is that what you want a kid to be doing anyway? Like, I don't play on a playground now, you know, I go on a treadmill to exercise, or I go to a dance class, but that doesn't mean that the joy of doing those things when I was a child should be, like, changed, you know?
I mean, there was no mention of, like, picking up something to color with, or, like, what about developing those fine motor skills when you're that young? Like, I would like to know how they address those things.
Yeah, they did mention a kindergarten class, that they have a kindergarten class, and I immediately thought of two things. One, I would love to see what their kindergarten class looks like. And two, I don't want my kindergartner with an iPad.
Oh, absolutely not. One, I just feel like I could only imagine like the kids picking their noses and then touching the screen and how dirty that is.
Gross.
And two, I mean, obviously the tech people, I'm sure, have figured out a way around this, but like there's so much information on there. Like, yeah. Do you get to tell them as a parent, like, this is what I'm doing at home with my child and I would not like him or her exposed to these things?
Yeah. Okay, let me end on a couple positives.
Fine, I have some too. You go first.
Okay, so, I mean, I think a cool thing about it is the idea that there are a lot of kids that they have these really awesome interests, but maybe those classes are not offered at their school or they're not fostered. And I do think that it's cool that a lot of these interests are being fostered with like very particular projects. And so like maybe the project-based learning aspect of it or a component of it would be a cool thing to integrate into, you know, a public school model. But I don't think that the whole day should be changed to be focused around like this technology that seems to be driving the classroom.
Absolutely. I just think that if this article and if this movement gets enough light, like I learned so much from this that I didn't know that the guy who did Khan Academy, he has his own school in Mountain View. I was totally not aware of that.
I didn't know that either. And I don't know how I didn't know that because like I'm always looking at Khan Academy and being like, when are they going to hire me to develop English curriculum for them?
Maybe that's what we'll do in our next life. We'll do Khan. I mean, yeah. Like we're very adept at editing and talking on the internet. Khan, yes. Academy, we're coming for you.
Khan Academy, hit us up. We will not talk negatively about you.
So I haven't looked into their school, but I'm very curious about it. And two, I think that, you know, the way to, yes, something needs to change with public education. And so maybe implementing a slightly radical idea in a small setting will have like a very positive trickle down effect in the future in some capacity that I can't determine yet.
You know, sometimes I think like, it has less to do with technology integration and more to do with like, how can we get these kids out of their seats? You know, like I think about how much time they sit in their seats all day long.
Oh, quite a bit.
And I wish that that was a factor, not just for the physical element, but just like to mix it up. But I also think that could be tackled with like schedule, like the way that we think about our schedules too, you know? But, I mean, that is, like, a total overhaul of a school. Like, schools that have done things like that where they do project-based learning and where the schedule is not, like, six periods a day, every day, the exact same classes. I think those models can be very cool, but it's, like, a completely different way of thinking about school.
Yeah. There's a school in Berkeley. I think it's a small charter school. I'm looking up the name right now. They do a portfolio system instead of any real grades. And
I like that.
And you should look them up because I think you would be interested. It's called Envision Education.
Oh, with an E?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard about them.
And so I've been doing a lot of research into them for a project that has been tasked to me for something else, which I'll tell you privately later, I guess. Sorry, internet. I don't know enough to talk about it in detail yet. But so far, okay. What I've seen looks really fascinating. And so just kind of changing the outcome from these small deliverables, which some students would call, quote, busy work.
Busy work.
Like the dreaded term.
Which is not always busy work. No. Most of the times in our classrooms, it's steps to get to where you're going.
Yes.
Yeah.
So beyond busy work to full integration of all subjects to reach some kind of huge takeaway. I think.
Like almost like having like a hypothesis and then like doing a project in order to answer it.
Correct. Or kind of like a capstone idea, but not at the AP level.
Oh, okay.
And like presenting in front of your teachers and being able to actually talk to people rather than just submit a worksheet and move on.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. It's also a smaller school though, but it seems really neat.
Is it private or charter?
Charter.
That's what I thought. I also really like the idea of no grades. I'm always a big supporter. Not that I think grades are like bad, but I tend to think grades are inflated.
Yeah.
And so I'm always a big fan of the idea of like a narrative or a combination of a narrative and a grade. So portfolios are cool. because they seem to be kind of on that track.
I think that next year I'm definitely going to look at incorporating more portfolio work into my class. It's not something I've ever really done before, but I think that going into year six for me, I need a little bit of a change.
Yeah.
And so I think I actually will do that.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, I would recommend anybody in teaching reading this article, Learn Different, in the New Yorker, even if we were kind of negative about it. Like, it is super interesting. I do also know that the teachers that work there make quite a bit of money.
Really?
Like, they pay them well. They also have, but they're, you know, they're not unionized. It's a private school, all of that, right? So they're like, it's like working for a company. I know they pay well. I also know that they have kind of a tech company model where they feed you. They, you know, they have services for you and they sell that to you. But, you know, the same way that those companies have those things for you because they never want you to leave your job. I'm sure there is some expectations like that in terms of working at the school as well.
Maybe we shouldn't have been so critical.
Why? Because you want some of that sweet, sweet alt school money?
No, I don't even want the money, to be honest. One of the things I hate most in life, I don't mind cooking breakfast. I for sure don't mind cooking dinner. I hate making lunch. If someone wants to make like a nice, well-balanced lunch for me, I would be all over that every day.
But people on the internet need to know how good your sandwiches are.
Yeah, but just because I make them for you and my husband and occasionally other people reap the benefits, but not usually. I don't enjoy doing it. But yeah, I make a mean sandwich.
Other than making sandwiches this week, what are you going to be doing?
Well, we're mapping Africa, which is always really fun listening to the kids try to pronounce the country names. Mm. But we learn eventually. And
what's one that they really have a hard time with or have never heard of?
Mauritania.
Ooh.
It's up near.
I can't blame them on that.
It's up near Morocco, if other people don't know where that is. Nothing really too exciting. We're going to start talking about African history, which I guess technically is exciting because, you know, it's not covered in any other standards in world history or their junior or senior years. So it's nice little exposure to some small instances that happen, specifically apartheid and then also the Rwandan genocide and the Congolese wars. A little bit overwhelming and
serious topics, but necessary.
Yeah. And tonight, though, unschool related, I know we're going to make a fire. Very excited for this rainy California weather.
Oh, you're using your fireplace?
Yeah.
With wood?
Yeah.
How unenvironmental of you.
I checked. It's a, we're good to go. It's not
it's a burn day?
It's not a spare the air day. We can burn. Okay. I think for like the two times a year I do it. I think that it's okay.
I'm totally teasing. I love a good fire.
What are you doing?
My fireplace is not reinforced. So I can't. Well, it's like it needs like a repair. So I'm actually, instead of repairing it, I'm going to get a gas insert because I know that I'll use it more often if I do that.
Yeah. See, I would really like that, but my fireplace is in perfect working condition.
Well, I will say that if you get a gas insert, that
I could use it on spare the air days.
Well, yes, but also it'll probably pay for itself pretty quickly because, like, you don't have to use your heat as much in the winter. It'll heat, like, your whole front room. So.
Something to think about.
This is all good for, like, our home improvement podcast.
Yes, that we're going to start on the side.
The teachers right now are like, where are you getting that money?
It's our imaginary money.
Yeah.
So what's your week like?
I don't know. I'm like in one of those places where I'm like, oh, right, I have to think about what I'm going to do next week. I'm like mid-Gatsby, teaching that to the juniors.
That's always fun.
So, yeah, it's fun. I don't know. Kids aren't as jazzed about it. Oh, dun-dun-dun. Kids aren't as jazzed about it this year. But I'm trying to get them into it, but there's just so many of them that are like, they don't love the language. Okay. And I feel like you have to really love the language to get into it.
They should just get over it. The language is great.
I know. I had a few kids like admit to me that they don't like it. And I'm like, all right, well, I don't have a problem with you if you don't like it, but I would like it if you could articulate your dislike thoughtfully.
That's a good compromise.
I mean, there's plenty of novels I don't like that are classics, but I feel like it's important to be able to say why you don't like them in an academic way.
Absolutely.
So, I guess that's what I'll be doing. I'm also finishing Night by Eli Wiesel, and then I'll be, like, assigning this Catalyst for Change paper to my sophomore, so I'm kind of excited. Ooh, one last thing I'm about to do.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, I got impromptu invited to go see Sarah Koenig talk about Serial in Berkeley. Yeah, and so I didn't see my seniors once I had found that out, because I haven't seen them since Thursday. But I put up on my Google Classroom site, like, what questions do you have for Sarah Koenig? Because I'm going to see her, and since I'm teaching them Serial, I thought they would, like, find it exciting. So Monday I will probably report back what she said.
That's fantastic. That sounds amazing.
That's what I'm up to.
Cool. Well, sounds like a good week. Do you want to tell all the information of how to find us? Because I always mess that up.
Yes. So please email us with your questions and comments at teacherbesties@gmail.com. You can also find us at teacherbestiespodcast@tumblr.com, or you can search for us on iTunes by searching Teacher Besties Podcast. And please share us on Facebook and the social medias.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.